Welcome to Side by Side, a podcast where I, Robert Kwong, take you inside conversations with artists, creatives, healers, and warriors taking the charge in their transformational story. Today's guest is Stephen Washington, the author of Recovering You, Soul Care and Mindful Movement for Overcoming Addiction, and the creator of SWE Studio, an affordable online community offering movement medicine, meditation, and more. In this conversation, we dive inside Stephen's early passion for dance, his journey towards sobriety, and the medicine he offers through his book and online community. If you're on Instagram, Facebook, or YouTube, be sure to connect with him to see his latest offerings. Well, it's so nice to connect with you like this, Stephen. I think I mentioned this when I first reached out to you, but I am a member of your Core Qigong community since last year. And at the time, I had been actually just maybe sending that out into the universe. I said, I think it would really benefit me to look into something like Qigong or Tai Chi. Little did I know, I just happened to stumble upon your account, I think through your partner's work as well, which I really admire and benefit from. So I was actually a little bit nervous to reach out to you, but I'm really happy to be connecting with you and talking about your work. How are you today?
I'm good. And thank you so much for what you just shared. It's nice to see a man that's part of my community. most of my students tend to be women. And I'm always excited when I see a man because, I just think there always needs to be this balance of energy of the masculine and the feminine. And I think there's so much that can be gained from the practices of Pilates and Qigong. And I always enjoy it when I see men participating. So thank you for what you're adding to that really special community.
And Stephen, you're the author of Recovering You, Soul Care and Mindful Movement for Overcoming Addiction. And it's been a little bit since the book launch. How has your journey been since the book launch?
It's been remarkable, I have to say. I didn't quite know what to expect. I have seen authors move through the process of writing a book and releasing it out into the world, especially since my husband Lee released his first book with New World Library, my publisher as well, several years ago. So I had a glimpse of that, but I knew that this experience for me was going to be different in some ways. And I was really looking forward to all the conversations I would have as a result of the book. And this conversation we're having right now is just one of many. And I was looking forward to just my evolution in the process of talking about the book, talking about myself, talking about my journey and all the tools and practices that are part of Recovering You. So it's been remarkable. I've loved it.
I've obviously enjoyed some of your interviews, and it's been quite the experience for me to hear someone talk about recovery and sobriety and addiction from such a joyful place. And so thank you for bringing that. And I am curious because in your book and in other platforms, you share a lot of your personal story, and there's a sense of honesty about what you've been through. And it made me just curious about some of your earlier experiences. I am curious, for example, where did you grow up and what was your early life like?
Thank you for that question. And also thank you for seeing the joy that's in my heart. I don't constantly live in a state of joy, but I try to access joy as much as I possibly can. And I've always felt that that's important in recovery because sometimes I think there's just a lot of identification with the pain and the suffering of the experience and the goal of getting sober and living a sober life is to be able to tap into more energies of happiness and joy and freedom. So thank you for seeing me. My early life, I grew up in Connecticut and I come from a small family, a small immediate family. It was just my mom, my dad, and my sister and I. And it was a very chaotic childhood, very chaotic upbringing. My parents had in their lives dealt with a lot of trauma and didn't have the tools to heal from it and manage it. And so I think a lot of that trauma and the pain of it was expressed through drinking, smoking, and big bursts of emotional energy, usually in the realm of anger and sadness and fear and all kinds of stuff like that. So being a young person who was very sensitive, like I was and still am, it was really hard to manage. One of the things that gave me some sense of peace and solace was movement. Whether I was spinning around the room like Wonder Woman, or if I was dancing to the music on the radio in the living room and losing myself. So I immediately, at a very young age, found movement to be something that was very easy for me and I felt very much at home within that. And that led me to eventually study dance when I was in high school. I went to a high school that offered the arts, theater, dance, music. A little bit like Fame, but not quite. We weren't dancing in the cafeteria on the tables and singing Hot Lunch. We weren't doing that. I did kind of expect that when I walked in the door. I was like, well, I thought this was going to be like Fame. But it wasn't. I learned a lot, and it started my study of dance, and dance and theater and the arts was my refuge because it allowed me to feel more comfortable being myself. And I knew from a very young age that I was different from other kids. I was different from other boys. I had a sense that I was gay. I didn't quite understand what that meant as a young person, but I knew I was different. And I felt accepted in that community, in the arts. And so dance was in theater, and music was just a place that really saved me. Had I not had that and that creative outlet, I think I might have killed myself. I don't know. And I'm really grateful to have had that. That gave me a lot, but it did not completely take away this sense of being on the outside.
Right.
This sense of being uncomfortable in my own skin. And that started to melt away the day that I had my first drink. My first time getting drunk, and I was about 15 years old. I was at a pub in Germany. I'd been given the gift of going to Europe, to Germany for 2 weeks or 3 weeks out of a summer back in the 80s with my dance teacher in our dance school in Greenwich, Connecticut. And that was just a mind-blowing, mind-opening, heart-opening experience of travel. And my first experience of like touring and what that's like. And so the very last night we had a party and beer was served and somebody handed me a beer and I drank the beer and I hated the taste of it, but I loved the way that it made me feel. I immediately felt different. I felt like I was a part of instead of apart from. I felt smart. I felt funny. I felt all the things that 15-year-old kid desperately wanted to feel and didn't feel like he had on his own. And so I tried to recreate that over and over and over and over again. And that was pretty much throughout my entire experience with alcohol and drugs.
Yeah.
So that's my upbringing in a nutshell.
When did you decide to move to New York City to pursue Broadway as a professional dancer?
I moved to New York City in 1989 as a freshman at NYU's Tisch School of the Arts. And I studied dance there for 3 years. It was a 3-year and 2-summer program. I never did the summers. And because of that, I was supposed to do another year, but I ended up leaving the program a year early. And I never went back to finish. College was really difficult for me. I had a hard time being in the general population of the university. I was great within the department. I excelled at dance and everything associated with it, but you threw me into another type of academic class and I did not know how to function. I didn't know how to study. I didn't know how to participate in class. And that brought up a lot of anxiety for me.
Yeah.
And so I eventually just stopped going to class. And one of the ways that I dealt with that anxiety was to drink and to do drugs. So I ended up leaving that program and never going back again. but I ended up having a really great career as a dancer in New York. And I lived in New York for, gosh, well over 20 years. And I loved New York.
A very illustrious and intense and just formative experience, you know, moving and living in New York, which is where I'm based right now.
But oh, are you really? Get out. Where? Where about?
I'm in Harlem right now, and I've been here for, I also came to New York City for, to study at NYU, and, but my focus was in basically creative writing. So actually I graduated from Tisch School of the Arts as well.
And, I love it.
Yeah. And I've been here for a minute, you know, as a queer person, you know, there's this life that one can have in New York that is so, again, the word that comes is intense, but certainly memorable. And, yeah. This is definitely a place where you can kind of test your limits in so many ways. So a lot of what you're sharing being here at the younger ages is very similar, and it resonates with me.
Yeah, beautiful. That's great. We have a lot of things in common. I used to live in Harlem too. I lived in Harlem in a couple of different places. I lived in right around the corner from the Apollo Theater.
Me too. That's where I am.
Oh my God. Yeah. So there's a schoolhouse, like a big school, on the corner, right by 125th Street in the train station.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
I think I lived on 126th and between St. Nicholas and I don't know what the other street was, but that was my first apartment ever on my own.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, a little studio apartment there. Rent was like $450.
Oh, that just makes my heart, you know, go like, those were the days. No.
I know, I know. And you know what? At that time, because of my addictions, it was hard for me to even scrape up $450 a month to be able to stay there. I ended up getting evicted. So like one of the things that happened as a result of my using over the years was that, just like the unmanageability. That was a perfect example of that.
You know, living in a place like this is vibrant and just so stimulating, right? Mm-hmm. I find it interesting that one can have a journey of discovering your limits and your boundaries. But also, this is a place where I first started doing yoga. Mm-hmm. And I first encountered the world of meditation because I felt like in my mid-20s, I needed something to ground me because of how mental and in my head I can be.
Yeah.
And so I'm curious, when did you first discover or look into things like mindfulness, meditation, Qigong?
I first started to look into really spirituality in general in New York City. You know, that was the place where I crashed and burned, but that's also the place where I built myself back up again when I got sober.
Right.
And that's the thing. Places like that, like that are just seem like crazy wild towns where you could just really lose yourself, are also the places where you can also find yourself and you can also ground yourself and tap into different energies that are more healing. I was exposed to all that stuff in New York City. You make me remember there's a Buddhist center down in Chelsea that a friend of mine took me to many, 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 many years ago. And they would have meditation centers, guided meditation sessions. And I'll never forget walking into this beautiful Buddhist center and looking at all the beautiful books and artifacts, and then walking into this great room and just finding a spot and sitting down and just being a part of that experience of meditation. I didn't take to meditation immediately. I struggled with it for a really long time. And then I eventually found my way to it. I found my way to it in my own way when I heard someone at a meeting say, you know, meditation can be as simple as just sitting down and being quiet and breathing while you're waiting for the water to boil.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all I needed to hear in order to begin my real authentic journey with it. But I didn't find Qigong until I was 10 years sober and I was living in California. I left New York in 2011 and I moved to California to start a new life because New York, as great as it is, it also wore me down and I needed something different as far as a living environment and also just a different career because all I'd ever done was dance and I needed to find out what else I could do besides dance. Mm-hmm. So by that point I was teaching Pilates and I thought that, moving to California to teach Pilates and also go back to school would be a great thing. And I decided to go back to school for Chinese medicine. And I studied at a place in San Jose, California. And part of that program was Qigong. And it was such an impactful practice to be exposed to and to learn. And it came at a time when I desperately needed it because I was so overwhelmed by the experience of being 40 years old, 40 something, and going back to school and studying and working at such a high level, because Chinese medicine school is really intense, especially as an American stepping into that world and that culture. It's quite a learning curve. And I was really overwhelmed by the experience and had a lot of anxiety and a lot of panic attacks. And it reminded me of my time at NYU too. Mm. It was like the same thing was happening over again. Mm. So one of the things, among many different things that helped me at that time, was the Qigong. Because moments before I would walk into my Qigong class, I would be in my car crying or shaking. My hands would like sweat just before I was about to take a test or anything like that. But I walk into that class and listen to Thomas, my teacher, is such an amazing Qigong teacher. And we begin the physical practice and I would just calm down.
Yeah,
I'd find my feet. And just having that experience over and over again, it helped me transform that state I was in. And also it helped me to zoom out and see the bigger picture. And the bigger picture for me was that I wasn't meant to be a Chinese medicine doctor, but I was meant to find Qigong. And I knew that I was going to practice that for the rest of my life and share it with others. And that's exactly what I've done.
And something that I read in your book is to even get into that program, there was a certain level, you had to meet a certain level of health and to even be accepted. And when I first read that, I thought, wow, that must have been an intense experience, because most people don't have to cross certain health checks to study or to gain their education. But before you could even get in, you had to have a certain level of progress in your journey with all of that. And that really stood out to me.
Yeah, I mean, what it was that in order to even be accepted into that program or any program, you just had to have certain prerequisites. Mm-hmm. And a lot of those prerequisites I didn't have because of my really complicated past with college. And so I had to go and catch up. So it took me about 2 years and change to get a lot of those courses under my belt before any school would even consider me. Mm-hmm. I worked so hard to get into that school, and it was such a devastating experience to work so hard to get there. And then when you get there, you realize, oh, wow, I don't know if this is actually right for me.
Right.
I did not know how to comprehend that.
Yeah.
My brain could not comprehend that. And so I kind of short circuited and had a bit of a breakdown / breakthrough, only to come out on the other side, be all the better for it.
Well, something you have on the other side now is Qigong, and your movement medicine is so, I've been able to benefit from it myself. But what made you decide to combine Qigong and Pilates as part of your work?
Actually, the idea came from a session that I had with my Qigong teacher, Lee Holden. I had a private session with him, and years ago, my husband Lee gave me a private session with Lee as a Christmas gift or something like that. Mm-hmm. And I was just grinning ear to ear when he gave that to me, because I just love Lee Holden so much. And one of the things that we did during that session was just talk about what it is that I do. And he said, oh, wow, you teach Pilates. Pilates and Qigong go so well together. That would be great, because they're both powerful modalities that really focus and move from the core. And I thought, oh yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And so I thought about that more intensely over time. And that led me to develop what's now my SWE studio and that fusion class. And I'm so happy about just how that has evolved over time. And I love that people like yourself really enjoy it and resonate with it and find it useful.
I remember this goes into my next question for you, but I remember the first video, let's say I clicked the first class, there was one movement, because at the time I was specifically reinventing my relationship to music. I'm a pianist. And so I never trained from a somatic or health perspective to how to take care of yourself. It was just about doing what you have to do, you know, with whatever you're given. And the first movement, listeners can't see, but it was this wrist rotating movement. When I first did it, I thought, are my hands just ancient because all my bones are cracking? And it's just I was like, this is not fabulous, but you know, finding certain movements like that, I was like, oh wow, these are just tiny small movements that just activated so much of my body, versus the way I thought about physical health was kind of like intense cardio, go 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 kind of experience, you know. But what are some of your favorite exercises or tools? Maybe it evolves from season to season, but let's say right now.
Well, shaking is one of my favorites. That is just like my go-to, knocking on the door of life. I love that movement and that sequence and all the different variations of it. It's a great one to just help energize yourself. I also love anything that moves laterally. Like, I love dog wags its tail and moving like a river. Anything that moves the spine and lateral flexion, it just feels just delicious to me. And I also love the five element flow sequences. They're just great, especially when you string them together and you add sounds. That's just so satisfying to my body, mind, and spirit.
And you can find this in your classes with your community. And it's also, you have many of these in your book as well, if people want to find another way to access it. So I love that. And based on your experience, what are some areas of the body that tend to be neglected the most, either, let's say, everyday life, or even maybe physical training? You feel like people often neglect certain areas.
People neglect their feet.
Ah.
People neglect their feet. And I say this in the book, I think our feet are probably the hardest working parts of our body, right? And we just don't pay a lot of attention to them. We often cram them into ill-fitting shoes and they just take a beating. So I love paying attention to the feet. I massage my feet every night, whether it's by hand or with a foot massager, a machine that I have that's sitting on right next to the couch in front of the TV. Just put it on for like 20, 30 minutes. That's really important. And I also think that our hands and I think our forearms are very neglected as well. We use our hands so much and everything that we do. Like you said, when you were doing this exercise and you could feel every bone in your every bone in your hand and in your wrists cracking and popping. Yeah. So it's just important to do movements and to massage areas of the body because it helps to mobilize the joints and helps to bring in blood flow to those different parts of the body and just to circulate energy. So I think hands and feet are so great. And when you massage your hands and your feet, you impact your entire body.
Yes. And you have some diagrams that illustrate that in your book about how your feet is that obviously, but in fact, scientifically is linked to every other part of your body.
Yes.
And some people might not know that. You also just demystified a lot of my cultural experiences growing up, the aunties in the playground, their movements. You know, that was my upbringing. It was more so seeing people more on a day-to-day basis. But then you kind of provide the knowledge and the study behind it, which I so appreciate.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
Before it was just, what are they doing? Swinging back and forth.
Now you know.
Exactly. And as you did incorporate more movement medicine and spirituality and mindfulness into your work, what was the impact that you noticed on your body that people can sort of like keep track of as they're doing the practice? Obviously, people are looking for change or some sign that something's working or not. What did you notice as you incorporated more of this medicine for yourself?
It's been my experience that practices like Qigong, you can feel the impact almost immediately, just in terms of the activation of energy in your body and the space that's contained in the practice for you to activate that energy and also to witness it. Because life is so busy that we are just going, and we don't take a lot of time to check in and notice how we feel.
Yep.
So that's one of the amazing things that's built into a Qigong practice. And that's something that people can pay attention to as they experience the modality and begin to invest their time and energy into a practice. Also, what people will notice too is that you'll feel your body gently warming up through the movements, which just encourages, again, the movement of the joints. And the thing is that if you don't move it, you lose it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that motion is lotion. And that when we bring motion into the body, our bodies are designed to move. The bodies move with more ease and effortlessness. And so movement encourages more movement and circulation. So you'll feel that as well. So that's all on a physical level, but then also energetically, like emotionally, what the practices have the power to do is to balance your emotions. Oftentimes I can begin a practice in a certain emotional state. And as I move through the practice, that emotional state will transform. It will evolve and shift. Li likes to refer to Qigong's ability to help us compost emotions, right? Yeah. We can take negative emotions and compost them and turn them into something new, more positive emotions. And not to say that negative emotions don't have usefulness. I think we are designed to experience all the different emotions that we have the capacity to experience. Oftentimes we can get stuck in certain emotions, and Qigong gently encourages us to move that emotional energy. And then also you'll notice that your mind starts to get a little bit more clear and a bit more focused just through the practice and connecting to your breath, shifting your body from perhaps fight, flight, freeze,
right,
that state within your sympathetic nervous system, to your parasympathetic nervous system, which is the rest, relax, and digest state of being. And that is the state where, when that's activated, we're able to turn on the healing properties within the body. And those healing properties affect us on a physical, emotional, and mental level.
Including the, what are they called? The happy chemicals, right? Mm-hmm. Dopamine, serotonin,
mm-hmm. Oxytocin, all that. Mm-hmm.
And if someone's looking to, let's say someone approaches you today and say, Stephen, I have this habit. It's no longer working for me. Something's got to change. I have to make a shift. What are the first things that you would have them look into to set up the foundations for this journey that they're going to go on? What are the first steps or the first things to look at when someone wants to get into recovery?
Really good question. Well, I think a really significant step is just the fact that they have awareness that something isn't right. Mm-hmm. And they have an awareness that what's not right is related to some behavior, addictive behavior or state of mind. And I think acknowledging that to themselves and then acknowledging it to another person is really impactful.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think in my own experience, surrounding yourself with people who are on a similar path or journey with that. Because what that does is it allows you to understand on a very deep level that you're not alone.
Yeah.
Addiction can be very isolating, and that isolation can show up in a lot of different ways. And I think getting yourself involved and connected to a group is really important. Now, for me, it was 12-step recovery.
Mm-hmm.
And 12-step recovery has saved millions of lives over the years.
Mm-hmm.
But there are also other addiction recovery programs and groups that one can connect to. And I mention all those groups in my book. But I recommend connecting to that.
Yeah.
Because it's important to if you're trying to do something, if you're trying to create change in your life, and it's something you've never done before, you don't really know how to do it. But if you can surround yourself with people who have done it, you get to learn by example.
Mm-hmm.
And you get to take what you need and leave the rest and chart your own path. So that's a really great way to start. And also what comes to mind too is everyone is different in terms of how they show up to this big moment, which is this moment of change, potential change and transformation. some of us show up more damaged than others. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's necessary to get more professional help, whether it's through counseling and as well as perhaps a rehab. Mm-hmm. A rehab facility. I had an experience not that long ago with a loved one of mine who had been struggling for quite some time with alcohol addiction. And I tried my best to be a power of example for her for years, and just hoping and praying that when she was ready, she would take what was being offered to her. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until late last year that she was finally ready mm-hmm. to accept help. There was just enough cracks in the armor in order for the light to come in. Mm-hmm. And the first step for her was to admit that and have that realization within herself and also with me, and then also to be willing to go into treatment. And so mm-hmm. she went into a 28-day treatment. Mm-hmm. facility, and she's now 6 months sober, which wow. is incredible. But it started yeah. with that.
Right. Well, you mentioned something that's really powerful to me, which is in the book, you talk about being with certain things like your fears, your sense of isolation and loneliness, and being with your shame and how to navigate that. And I think it's a good reminder for people when they're starting this journey, we're just on this journey, that they don't have to figure everything out on their own. We're just so used to hiding and feeling like we're the only person who can handle anything. But really what you just described is a journey of accepting support, which is so wonderful, right? There are many people out there who know exactly what you're going through.
Yeah.
And while we might not be able to negate things like fear as an experience from time to time, you know, we can get out of that as a lifestyle. So it makes me curious, how would you describe your relationship to those aspects now, like fear, shame, if and when they do come up?
Yeah, they do come up. I've been sober for 20 years, but it doesn't mean that I don't feel all those feelings and that I don't have to navigate those very tricky and complicated emotional states. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I have come to understand through my time in recovery and all the work that I've done on myself is that fear is an emotion that underlies so many different, so many other emotions, so many other aspects of life.
Yeah.
But I've learned that fear isn't something that I really need to be afraid of, that it's okay for me to feel fear. Hmm. And that it's okay for me to feel fear, and that fear is an emotion that can pass over time. There was a time when if I felt fearful about something, I felt like I had to do something about it immediately. I didn't have the ability to sit with it.
Ah.
And over time, I've learned how to sit with my fears and also examine them. And I talk about this in the book, being able to take one of my fears and play out what's the worst case scenario with this fear and really like write it down, take a look at it, and sharing it with another person can also be a really helpful way of managing your fears and not just keeping it inside. And as far as shame is concerned, I still feel little tinges and twinges of shame.
Are you human, Steven?
Yes, I am. Yeah. And it pops up. But the thing is, like I said, much like fear, what I know now is that I can have those experiences, I can have those feelings, and I don't have to act out because of them. Because mm-hmm. my go-to was to drink, to use drugs, to smoke, anything to get outside of myself and what I was feeling. I still have the desire when I'm feeling those things to get outside of myself and to escape from that feeling. But I have a more of a capacity to sit with it than I ever have before. And it has a lot to do with just the practices that are part of my life mm-hmm. and my spiritual fitness, the connection that I have to my higher power. Because at the end of the day, what truly stands between me and another drink or another drug is my connection to my higher power. Because I have a lot of people around me who support me, but they're not always there with me, right? They're not always accessible. And I need something even bigger than all of them and me to lean on.
Yeah. Thank you for that. You talk about just now how, you know, learned to be with your fear, to allow yourself to give space for these things when they come up, rather than to automatically avoid or run away or deny or suppress. And you've shared a particular meditation, and I believe the Tibetan term translates to sending and taking. In this meditation, you are taking in the pain and burdens of others with every in-breath and sending out whatever will benefit them with the out-breath. The reason why...
The breath prayers.
Yes. Mm-hmm. The reason why it fascinates me is because it's kind of inverse to how one might think of living a good life, which might be to avoid pain and suffering and to go towards pleasure and joy. So I'm just curious, for meditations like this, why that can actually be a benefit to the individual, to allow yourself to take in something that's not necessarily love and light, but allow yourself to take in and try to transmute it.
That's a really good question. See, I look at the breath prayers that I mentioned in the book a little differently, because I think about that practice as a way to bring in more of whatever it is I feel like I need in the moment.
I see.
And if I feel as though I'm lacking something, like if I'm lacking peace, I try to breathe in more peace. Mm-hmm. And as I exhale, I try to release out whatever might be standing in the way of me having more peace. And it might be my own fears. It might be my worries. It might be any of those things. And it's just this marriage of combining just a physiological act of breathing and intention and bringing them together, and just how doing that creates an opportunity of connecting with something greater than yourself. It has the ability to bring about a different level of presence. And then also it also gives us the chance to cultivate more trust and faith and optimism, which I think many of us have moments of struggle with that, especially when we're going through big challenges in life.
Yeah.
So I incorporate that into my own personal practice and also in the book, because I just know how powerful it is. And it was only later that I realized that there was something similar to that in the Buddhist tradition as well.
Yeah, but similar paths, very similar in terms of making sure it's about the intention. So before we wrap up.
Oh my gosh, we're going to wrap up, Robert? We're going to wrap up? I could do this forever.
I know, these conversations, I was like, I have more questions. I really want to respect your time, and I'm just curious. I don't want to have you leave without being able to tell people a little bit more about SWE Studios and what your courses and programs are like, because I love them, and they're also very, in some ways, customizable. So if you'd like to share anything about ways that people can reach you and ways that people can learn from you.
Oh, great. Thank you for this opportunity. So yes, anyone listening to this podcast can go to my website, stephenwashingtonexperience.com, and find out more about me and the work that I do. My flagship offering is SWE Studio, which is a community that I've created where I provide on-demand, affordable, accessible wellness content that's centered around my Pilates and Qigong Fusion class that I've been teaching for several years now. In addition to Pilates and Qigong, I also teach laughter medicine, meditations, dance classes, other wellness practices to help people live a more conscious and joyous life. It's just $22 a month, and that's really nothing when you think about what we spend at Starbucks each and every week. It's just a drop in the bucket when you think about doing something that could really up-level your self-care. And we all need self-care, and most of us aren't getting enough of it. So my SWE Studio is a great community. I also have online classes that I have created, and I'm about to release a new online program called 30 Days of Well-Being that will be released March 15th. It's 30 days of short Qigong practices that are designed to energize your body and soothe your, balance your emotions and calm your mind with just 8 to 12 minutes a day.
Perfect.
30 days. And you can also find on my website links to where you can buy my book, Recovering You, Soul Care and Mindful Movement for Overcoming Addiction. You can find it on Amazon as well as Barnes & Noble on the website and even in many locations. You might even find it in your local bookstore. And if you don't see it on the shelf, be sure to ask the bookseller to order you a copy. And you can also find links to all of my social media platforms like Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, TikTok, Medium, etc.
Perfect. I'll be sure to reflect as much of that in the show notes as possible. So
thank you.
Thank you so much. This is a big honor for me, and as someone who has benefited from your teachings, it's been a pleasure to be able to speak with you like this.
Thank you so much, Robert. It's so great to get to know you. Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in. If you'd like to connect with me about the podcast or about my services, you can find me on Instagram at Robert Kwong Home, or you can find me through my coaching website at www.robertkwongcoaching.com.